This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, I'm Kim Salmon. I'd like to have a quick word about public radio, particularly 3CR. The thing about public radio is that it's more open than the more formatted types of radio to what's going on around it. So when you listen to it, you're more likely to hear a reflection of real life. And 3CR, being in the heart of Smith Street, Collingwood, is a particularly good example of what I'm talking about. If you'd like to subscribe, the number is 94198377.
You've been listening.
For my 10th birthday, For my 10th birthday, my parents gave me a second-hand bicycle. And Papa, my grandfather, sent me a second-hand Atlas. Already I was an enthusiastic cyclist, though I'd never before owned a bicycle. And soon after my birthday, I resolved to cycle to India one day. I have never forgotten the exact spot on a steep hill near Lismore where this decision was made. Halfway up, I rather proudly looked at my legs, slowly pushing the pedals around, and the thought came, if I went on doing this for long enough, I could get to India. And that's from Devala Murphy. Ah, that's right. Sit up, take a breath. You're riding through a nice spring morning here in Melbourne. The elms, the plains and the oaks are now in flower, in leaf. And the roads are getting clean. Not quite. Yeah, and you're listening to the Arabug Show here on Radical Radio 3CR. Podcasting, streaming, or listening on that old transistor in the kitchen. We've got a bit of a show coming up today. Actually, that's a nice quote from Devala to check on us. I like to say sometimes the Yarrabug is a show about bikes, riding them, fixing them, loving them. And today we're going to tell the story about what happens when you head east, keep going, and end up in the place you first began. Faith, good morning. Lovely. Oh, sorry. Faith, good morning. Lovely to see you.
Good morning, Val.
And Robbie, that Eastwood trip. Lovely to have you land back in Melbourne at 3CR.
Kia ora. Good morning, everybody.
There we go. All good. Look, we're going to kick off a little bit with our usual ride through a little bike moment, that little essential thought sometimes, or just a moment that crosses you when on a bicycle. Faith, you've got something to share with us?
I think last Wednesday with the Marybeck Bug Wednesday ride, we did a little detour from the route and visited the Wheel Sisters artwork at Glenroy Station that Marybeck Council made to celebrate the Wheel Sisters program, which is one that teaches primarily Muslim women in the north to ride bikes. And I hadn't seen the artwork since the launch, but seeing it again and seeing it through the eyes of people who knew nothing much about the program, because there was a whole group of us, obviously, it was really, really special to see it again. You think, wow, it actually is quite something.
It's all they always things look differently at different times, don't they? It's interesting,
and it's quite quietly impressive. Like there's almost life size stencils of these women on bicycles, and then these stunning posters with based on a mix of what the women look like. They're not based on any individual person, but beautiful, beautiful artwork, and all lined up along the shared path at Glenroy Station. So, yeah, well worth making a detour to visit.
There we go. Look, I had this interesting thing happen the other day that I imagine I've had the feeling before but never really noticed it. Just hang with me for a sec. I mean, we all know, well, some of us know that awful feeling you walk out of somewhere and you go to get your bike and all there is a broken lock and that awful feeling. Oh, no. It's never really registered me until somebody, I saw it mentioned somewhere after the fact. But I went to the Bicycle Network 50 birthday and... Look, it's the first time I've locked a bike up in Swanston Street for a very long time. And look, it occurred to me before I left home.
You didn't use the valet parking provided.
We said valet parking.
That's okay.
Well, sometimes the lesson. Anyway. That's ruined my day.
Sorry.
That's all right. Hey, listen, so I locked up. Opposite, oh, God, that Capitol Theatre roof, I mean, just reminds me so much of things I could talk about, but I'm not going to get distracted. But I locked up across the road in Swanston Street outside the town hall, and I'm going, nah, it'll be all right. So after the night was finished and I walked out and I looked across the road and saw the bike, and I experienced for that slight moment that relief that my bike hadn't got stolen. And I realised that actually I probably experienced this a lot, but it's actually the first time I really sort of noticed it. As I looked up and saw it there and I go, oh, and that just sense of relief that washed over me.
That it's still there.
It's still there. Oh, Robbie, have you got something with us to share?
Yeah, so I went to the Great Rite of Return yesterday.
Oh, cool.
Which was really
very
lovely.
Good.
So in solidarity with the Gaza Sunbirds and headed down to the big rally at the State Library. And yeah, it's just really great, like rolling deep with a big crew of bikes and, you know, just always a reminder that cyclists do have a lot of solidarity with a lot of people and, it's just dope.
It's that connection that is built between people who ride.
Yeah. And it is a good show of solidarity.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. From all disparate groups, different groups of people. Yeah. And there've been when I was on, there've been quite a large groups. They've been very, run very well. Everybody feels safe.
Just on that that moment where you get the relief your bike wasn't stolen, it reminded me of something I did a couple of days ago. I went to meet someone at Sirius. And locked up my bike. And I think this is the thing when you do two things. I then went to do something else, and because it was very close, thought I'll just walk. I won't bother going and getting my bike. So I walked there, and then I just started walking home. And then at some point on the way home, I thought, oh, it's really funny. I don't even remember walking to Sirius. And that's when I realised my bike was still at Sirius. So it's kind of the... Yeah, the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah. And look, you know, it's not till it happens and you really break it down and look at it that you realise what's going on. Anyway, hey, listen, we got a little bit of news.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Bicycle Network's 50th anniversary celebration last week, which saw hundreds of people turn out at the Capitol Theatre to celebrate the first 50 years of Bicycle Network. It was a good celebration, lots of people there from across the different area parts of the primarily Melbourne bike world, and a lot of talk about how the focus in the future is shifting back to more advocacy, bicycle user groups, and fighting to make things better for riders. One thing they campaign that is being run at the moment is listeners may remember a few weeks ago when we were talking about the Victorian government's plan to ban people travelling with e-bikes from trains. Now, the consultation period for that has closed. The Victorian government received 3,000 submissions. But the latest update from Bicycle Network after a meeting with the Minister, Gabrielle Williams, is that the government still seem hell-bent on implementing that ban, even though New South Wales, who were going to do the same thing, have instead taken a more targeted approach, banning modified and converted bikes, as they're the batteries that have been involved in fires. So Bicycle Network are asking everyone to write to their MP. There's a link on their website, which I will include in the podcast. But if you Google it now, if you go and hunt around in the Bicycle Network website, you'll find it. There's a link there with a list of all MPs for Victoria if you don't know who yours is. And they're also asking if this is going to impact you to send them a photo of you with your bike. So they can sort of show the human impact of that ban. So that's really, really disappointing news that the Minister for Active and Public Transport would make impossible one of the most effective combination trips there is. And it stops people getting to work, it stops them getting to uni, it stops them staying connected with friends and family. There's a lot of people who rely on the train for the part of their journey they can't do on their bike, either because it's too far or often because there isn't safe infrastructure. So you use the train for that section. It's going to have a huge impact on thousands of people. So we'll put a link up to that. But if you have a look at the Bicycle Network website, proposed e-bike train ban, there's an update there with all those details.
Let's get on to that, because there are a lot more people in that situation that everybody gives a lot of credit to, I think.
Well, and if you are not in that situation now, you might well want to
be. You might end up in that situation.
And this is the thing, the decision's being made in a complete vacuum of data. The Victorian government has never bothered to count how many people were using trains with their bikes, let alone how many of them are e-bikes and who those people are and why they're using it.
No.
So a big policy decision made in a vacuum of meaningful data.
Yep. That is government as we speak now. We'll be back right after this.
Yarrabug would like to thank Bicycle Network for their financial support. Bicycle Network, a not-for-profit with 45,000 members, working to get more people riding for their health and well-being. Bicycle Network is proud to sponsor the Yarrabug program and support its important advocacy for safer and more accessible riding. By becoming a Bicycle Network member and or participating in one of their iconic riding events, you're supporting Bicycle Network's Ride to School programs and advocacy campaigns to make it easier for everyone to ride a bike every day. Visit bicyclenetwork.com.au for more information.
And you're back listening to the Yarrabug Radio Show. As Val mentioned earlier, our guest today is Robbie Webb. Thanks for joining us in the studio, Robbie.
No worries.
Robbie has just spent, not just, but very recently, spent 337 days, 20 hours and 17 minutes riding over 29,000 kilometres around the world. And also in doing so has nabbed the record for the first transgender person to travel around the world.
Yeah, almost. It's just it's pending at the moment while Guinness reviews all my evidence, but you know.
Yeah.
We hope.
So I guess the question we always ask people who ride around the world first is why? What made you think this is something I want to do?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been working on this since before I even started transitioning. It was when I started, it was already about 5 years of work. And when I first cycled the length of New Zealand to the Tour Aotearoa, a lot of people towards the end were like, oh, I'm so glad I'm finished. Like, that was a great adventure, but time to go home. And I got to the end and was like, I wish I had more time. I could just ride back. And then one thing led to another. And I went, well, if I'd like to ride New Zealand again, why not further, why not more? And the best way to solve like climate emissions and whatnot is to overland as much as possible. So the best way to see the world and not fly too many times is to bike it continuously from end to end, it turns out.
You didn't answer the question. Was there at some stage you proudly looked down at your legs turning circle after circle and thought, if I just keep doing this, I can keep going on?
Yeah, yeah. I guess, like, as well, when you see other people doing it, it's like they're fairly normal as well, you know, like, you know, like, oh, like, that's not like a super athlete that cycled around the world. That's like just another person.
Yeah. I don't think there's a cyclist alive that actually at some stage on a ride would just wish that they could just keep riding along.
But it is interesting what you mentioned, that by the end of that first trip, some people were ready to go home, but there are others, and I think Devla Murphy is a perfect example, who just think, well, I could just keep going. They don't have that feeling, that pull to go home. Was that what happened for you?
Yeah, partially that, and then also because I had kind of finished cycling all of New Zealand, so I was looking for new places where I might belong.
All of them all at once.
Yeah, let's try them all. It's a numbers game.
And was there a reason you chose 2024?
Yeah, a little bit. So sort of on a whim over time, as I was like kind of like reaching my limits with work and social life and stuff, I just started to wonder, oh, maybe there's a world record in this that I could do. And then I checked Guinness's website and there was one sitting there. First openly transgender person to cycle around the world was available, and I was like, oh, I guess that's for me then. And then of course, knowing that politically things are changing, Trump was probably going to get elected and whatnot, I started to get to the point where I was like, okay, I actually have to go now, because if I don't go now, I might not be able to cycle across the United States at all. And I think as time has gone on, that's proven to be pretty likely, that like it wouldn't be worth the risk of trying to enter the States as a transgender person right now with like such a huge cost to travel over there.
That's a really sobering thought to think that. I mean, you mentioned that as you completed the ride, doors were slamming shut behind you. It's really sobering to think that that's, you know, that's happening.
Yeah, especially not just the States, but throughout Europe as well. Like more right-wing governments are becoming elected. Mm. When I got to Georgia, the new anti-LGBT law had just come into effect, which criminalised a bunch of things, but one of them was what they were calling LGBT propaganda. So no pride flags, no like expressions of queerness. And as someone who was publicly doing a world record about being transgender, I was a bit like, ooh, uh-oh. But in the end, I got to the border and they said, have you been to Georgia before? And I said, no. And they said, welcome to Georgia. I was like, okay, cool. I'll carry on quickly.
On the one level, we have that political landscape where all these things are playing out. In terms of your experience on the road, was that reflected there or was it something different?
Yeah, I think being foreign definitely protects you from a lot, especially on a bicycle, because you're so interesting and so strange to most people in like most parts of the world that don't have a cycling culture. So places like, you know, Germany and whatnot, you don't get very much attention because it's just another one of you. But lots of other places, like, everyone is really sweet and interested and friendly. And also, I guess, like, they don't really know what a transgender person looks like most of the time, even though they like to think they do. So the biggest part was that because it was a world record, I have to get witnesses every day. And if people ask, I would have to tell them. So there were a few moments in the States where I had to tell people and they were a bit like, oh, okay, I guess I'll sign this, but like, we don't really like people like you around here. And I was like, okay, whatever,
I'll
just
leave
sign
as
my
soon
thing.
As you sign it.
But the bike's a bit of an insulator in those circumstances, isn't it?
Yeah. Everyone thinks, you know, a traveller on a bike seems very harmless and very trustworthy, which most of the time we are, because we're very vulnerable on a bike.
Yeah.
And that really, like, helps you connect with people in ways that you just wouldn't on most other modes of transport.
Mm. Yeah. And look up... Speaking of Deval and Murphy, and I'm not going to speak for yourself, but part of that is having an openness to difference,
yeah,
which is part of being part of a cyclist and part of being a traveller as well, is being open to people. And I think in amongst cycling groups, we're always open to each other. So it requires that openness of mind to do it, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, like, when we talk about things like the rise of fascism and whatnot, a lot of things you see with that is, like, people having a lack of imagination, whereas, like, we're out there imagining that we can go interesting places on our bicycles and we're imagining that people are nice, and most of the time they are.
Yeah.
And besides... those politics, you also mentioned bicycle destruction followed you everywhere you went. Was this another interesting part of the travels?
Yeah, something you learn that, like, most things these days are not designed for people who ride for 8 to 12 hours per day, every single day, continuously. So I broke a lot of things. I got hit by a car and I bent my fork and had to get a new fork. I snapped my cranks in half. In the desert, my tire shredded all the way through to the point that I could put my whole finger through it. It was just horrible. There were lots of mishaps. And, like, I think often people think when you cycle around the world, the skill is cycling. But the skill is not cycling. The skill is problem solving. And possibly spreadsheets in my case as well.
Yeah, because of the documentation you have to...
Yeah.
No one thinks, I'm going to do this awesome bike ride and maintain some spreadsheets. That'll be fun.
Or actually write the narrative and post the pictures at the same time you're doing it, whereas other people actually keep a diary, do the trip, then come home and write it up, whereas nowadays it's all done virtually on the job, isn't it, or on the fly.
Well, people take drones and spend, you know, hours every evening trying to edit together all that material. So what were the favourite parts of your ride? Let's get back to the riding around the world.
I mean, like, because it's a whole year, it's always so hard to describe, like, any one particular favourite place or person, because there's just so much. It was like I almost, like, dropped out of time a little bit for a while. Like, time moved differently for me. But some of the greatest things was just, like, because... coming from New Zealand, a lot of people have moved to other parts of the world, and I just, everyone who said, oh, come visit me in X place at some point, I just lined them all up and went and saw all of my friends. It was lovely. And I made lots of new friends as well, and so as much as, like, in some ways I find social media can be very painful and corrosive to society, it did connect me with a lot of lovely cyclists around the world, and I generally found that, like, people would just say, oh, come hang out with us here, or come stay at my house, and then I did, and even the most murderous-looking profiles were, in fact, very lovely.
So there's still that connection and that really lovely moment that happens on the bike when you're travelling with someone in the general store or the... on your Instagram account either. It
comes out to meet you as you come to the town or things like that. Did you ever get close to pulling the pin?
No, and I think this is, like, the thing with the fact that I had to fund my own trip through working for a few years before I could go on it. The thought of having to restart that process again was so awful. There was nothing to go back to. Like, I packed up my whole life. I didn't have a job anymore, finished my job. I put everything in a teeny tiny storage unit, had no furniture. I kind of hoped that, like, this point after doing the world tour would be then a point where afterwards my life would be different. And so I had kind of wrapped everything up. And, like, that really helped in terms of the commitment that, like, even when I got hit by a car in the States and people were like, oh, yeah, you'll probably go home now, eh? I was like, oh, well.
Where is home?
Yeah. Would I?
Or what is home?
Yeah, yeah. And so you said you'd hoped by the time you finished it, your life would be different. Is it different?
Yeah, it is in many ways, I think, because, like, you learn a lot about how to make consequential decisions about your own life, because when you're on the bike touring, you make those decisions every day.
Yeah.
There's nothing propelling you forward except yourself. So instead of, like, each day you go to work because work expects you to be there, you have to make that decision to keep moving. And so now I do creative work, but, like, it is definitely similar in that way where you have to make yourself do it.
And
having a practice of, like, self-determination and whatnot is kind of something that I've developed through bike touring. And I think that's why getting people in diverse communities into bike touring is cool, because it helps you develop those sorts of life skills as well.
Yeah.
You can't procrastinate while you're on a bike, can you?
No.
Or a repair or a flat tire. It's actually...
You do have to do something.
Just do it.
Might not be the right... You have to do something. And I think I, you know, that thing with riding where, well, there's no point stopping. I just have to keep going no matter what has happened. That then does play into other parts of your life. When things get really hard, you think, well, you know, I did that on a bike. I know from that, all I have to do is keep going, and this will eventually be behind me. like, that mountain or whatever it is eventually be gone as long as I just keep going. And it does apply to so many other things.
It's like that first 15 minutes on a bike where you're a bit stiff and you're a bit, you know. And then suddenly after 20 minutes, your heart changes, you open the lungs up, you smell the jasmine on the side of the road, and things are at peace again. Robbie, I've got to ask, have you got a first bike memory?
I'm going to give you not a first bike memory, but I'm going to give you a wheel-related memory. So I grew up in rural New Zealand, and we used to have a school triathlon, which would involve running and swimming and cycling. But when I grew up, I didn't know how to ride a bike, so I had a push scooter. But the cycling section was all on grass, so I just ran around carrying a scooter. so I guess my parting message is, if you're like, oh no, I'm past it, like, I don't know how to ride a bike, like, neither do I.
Oh, lovely. Robbie, thank you very much. Thank you for setting a world record for people to aspire to.
Cheers.
That's all we've got time for.
Coming up next is a sheep.
There we go. We're a double go today. Thank you very much. Take care, Robbie. Yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.